Hi, and welcome to the Georgetown Law Boston Geographic Market Series. I'm Jen Van Buren, an Associate Director in the Office of Career Services. Today, we're thrilled to be speaking with Rob Delena, the owner of Legal Staffing Solutions in Boston. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today, Rob.
My pleasure, Jen. Happy to help.
So can you start by describing a little bit the size of the legal market in Boston?
Sure. Boston is a large legal market. I mean, it's certainly smaller than New York or D.C., but I think it's in that next cluster of cities like Chicago or San Francisco, where you have, you know, a fair number of global firms that have offices here that are decent size. You have some Boston firms that originated here and have grown to, you know, 150 or 200 lawyers. And then you have a lot of satellites of national firms that at least have a, you know, 10 to 20 persons office. So I'd say it's a pretty good size legal market overall.
Great. And what kind of legal work do you typically find in the Boston market?
Well, I think it all starts with the client base. And Boston will always be an incubator for technology and biotechnology companies that range from early stage startups to emerging companies to larger public companies. And a key component to that kind of technology and biotechnology practice is finding the seed money to fund those companies, especially in the early stages. So on the other side of the coin, Boston will always be a hotbed for venture capital companies and private equity companies that pool money together and invest in these tech and biotech companies. All legal work seems to flow, you know, from that client base. So you have a lot of corporate work that's generated as a result, a lot of intellectual property work, and even the litigation work that's here, you know, usually stems from some dispute that arose over intellectual property that has something to do with technology or the science behind a life science biotech kind of company.
Great. So have you found that there's any particular practice areas that are really in high demand at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, a hard one to answer sometimes because this doesn't change. You know, I think that the legal market in Boston, if I answered this question for the next 20 years, you'd always find that corporate groups were the busiest. I think corporate is the driving force behind the client base I just talked about. And as a result, corporate groups seem to be working the most hours. I mean, obviously there's ebbs and flows, and I've done this for 18 years, and there's been some, you know, years when things were pretty rough for corporate departments, but you know, since about 2010, it's been pretty consistent that corporate associates are working the most hours. You know, so that's always a hot area. You know, intellectual property is always hot just because of the nature of the client base. And that ranges from real science types, PhD types that do the patent type work to, you know, licensing types that aren't, you know, PhD scientists but just have an interest in technology. And on the litigation side, you see a lot of IP lit. So those areas are always probably the hottest. Within corporate itself, there's some subsets that I think are worth noting. Fund formation, which is the pooling of money to form venture capital funds or hedge funds, that's always a big driver here in Boston. You see a lot of that work. There's a lot of regulatory work that stems from the hedge funds in the venture world, too, so there's a lot of work like that. Private equity, which sort of drives the mergers and acquisition part to corporate practice, that tends to be hot. And then, you know, we have a lot of public companies, and a lot of these Boston companies, their goal is, you know, ultimately to be a public company. Tremendous amount of legal work is generated once you're a public company, a lot of regulatory SEC work, and that always keeps associates humming at many law firms in Boston.
Great. And have you found that any particular practice areas are experiencing a lull in demand right now?
Yeah, again, I'm a little hesitant to answer lull because it tends to always be this way. And if you look at litigation in general is always of a lesser demand. I mean, just pure general litigation is of a lesser demand than corporate. And that affects my world more as a lateral recruiter. You see less outflow of litigators leaving firms, and you see less hiring as a result. For 1L's rising into this fall recruiting place and into this program, I would say, you know, litigation is still a big, you know, part of the hiring part process. I think firms use their summer program to ultimately staff their groups with litigators. So, you know, if you look at, you know, the 100%, you know, of the pie that will be divvied up in terms of the 2L offers that will go out, I think 65% will probably go to corporate people, but I think a good 30 to 35% still go to litigators. So I don't want to scare people off who are interested in litigation.
Right.
It's just that it's certainly lesser, you know, it's of a lesser demand than corporate. There are some that are worth noting, I think, that are just never in demand here. And we don't see the regulatory type work that you guys have down there in D.C. So energy, environmental, also entertainment, Stuff like that. We just really just don't have it up here. So it's entertainment's obviously hotter in New York or L.A., and the regulatory stuff is hotter in D.C. So those are practices to steer, not steer clear of, but if you're going to walk into an interview and say, I want to be an entertainment lawyer, an environmental lawyer, you're really competing for maybe one job in the whole city for the summer. So I always advise students when they're, even the litigators, if you're interested in purely litigation or a small specialty group, when you walk into that interview, it's always wise to say, I'm interested in being a tax lawyer. I have this background in tax. However, I would consider, corporate as well. If you can crack the door on corporate, at least it keeps you in that big pool of potential applicants rather than foreclosing you and putting you into this really tiny subset that's competing for one job. I'd rather see students, get an offer and then maybe navigate around a firm and say, well, they really just don't have the work that I'm interested in. But if you walk in and say, I just want to do this one thing, you're really probably foreclosing that option entirely without even having a chance to explore it, post-offer.
Right. So you had mentioned that, a lot of this work is coming from the tech and the biotech companies. Are there any other particular industries that are sort of driving this work? And can you talk a little bit about the tech and biotech industries?
Sure. I mean, tech and biotech, it sounds, really technical, and I think it may scare, some students. But if you think about it, if you look at New England and probably most economies in the United States, we don't manufacture anything. We don't make anything. Even a company that an old mainstay company, like we have, Reebok makes, sneakers, and General Electric is here, and they make submarines, and they make, all kinds of things that range from, computer chips to, big ticket, power lines. I mean, all of those companies, even a sneaker company, in a way, has become a technology company. So, it's there's still some, sort of old mainstays here, but it's really boiled down to the people that are in the United States doing that kind of work are tech focused. And the other side of it is life science. We just have a tremendous amount of life science companies, and that doesn't mean you need to be a biologist or have a science background. At the end of the day, if a company is doing corporate work, the transaction is the same. But for a life science company, they're not really making anything on site. They're licensing out, some molecule or some piece of what they've discovered in a lab to, another company that's going to, try to make a medicine out of it. I mean, ultimately, that's those transactions are no different whether you were selling a piece of real estate or you're loaning out your medicine to be used. I mean, you have to protect the intellectual property rights, and you have to make sure you get it back, and you have to make sure if something does great come out of it that there's royalties. So while it sounds very technical, at the end of the day, I think it's corporate work is still corporate work, and litigation work is still litigation work. It's just that when students walk into an interview, they should know that really the lifeblood of the economy here, are particularly those two sectors. The other part we have that I should probably note is mutual funds. I mean, Fidelity was started here, Putnam. We've had some old, Yankee New England, type businesses that were some of the original mutual funds in the country. That work is somewhat specialized. It's a certain subset of corporate, but even the mutual funds that are here, probably have a lot of interest in sort of buying the stocks of the tech and biotech companies that are here. So you'll see even a sort of a slant for those kind of big ticket mutual funds as well.
Yeah. So you emphasize that it's not really technical, and the corporate work is sort of going to be the same. But do you find that there are particular skill sets that are in demand in Boston? Is there, are they looking, are they paying special attention to students who have science backgrounds or tech backgrounds?
That's a great question. I mean, I think the short answer is yes. I mean, if you have a science background and you have a tech background, use that to your advantage. I mean, that's going to be something that firms are going to be interested in, particularly if you have an advanced degree in any electrical engineering or computer science or life sciences. That's going to be a big asset. But for everybody else, I mean, your basic corporate hiring, there's no science background, there's no technical background at all. I mean, it's all walks of life. But, as someone who was a practicing associate once and did these interviews, I know what you look for in corporate associates. You really look for people who are kind of eager and look like they want to roll up their sleeves and get to work, and they're detail-oriented, and they're multitaskers, and they can handle, deadlines under pressure. A lot of, corporate really requires just sort of organizational skills, and attention to detail is huge. So, I mean, anybody can walk into an interview with any background from anywhere and say, I really don't even know what a corporate associate does, but from what I know, I know that it requires, this kind of a skill set, and this is stuff I'm good at and that I like. I like, sort of piecing the puzzle together, and I like the series of steps that would go in making a transaction. And even if you're not well-versed in what these transactions look like, and nobody really is, in law school, it's just not something you touch on unless you've worked on Wall Street before law school or you worked at a hedge fund or something. I mean, you're really not going to have a lot of nuts and bolts experience. So I think most firms really are just hiring, sort of eager folks who aren't afraid of hard work and are, aren't afraid to, sort of be in a building block kind of practice. First year corporate work, let's face it, isn't very glamorous. I mean, a lot of it is, has some sort of paralegal type skills to it where you're really just kind of keeping things organized and making sure that, stuff on the to-do list gets done. It's, litigation, I think, is a lot more comfortable for folks because when you go to law school, you learn how to litigate. As a first-year associate, you're going to walk in and write memos and research and prepare briefs and, ultimately work on depositions. That's a lot more comfortable for students, and I think that's the default answer when asked what do they think they're going to do. But it's really important for, Boston, folks that desire to be in Boston, that even if they're 100% sure they want to litigate, I would always at least crack that door in corporate, like I said, just to say, I don't know much about this. I wouldn't mind seeing some assignments this summer in that area because it won't foreclose corporate as a hiring option for you. And frankly, I mean, anecdotally myself, I walked in thinking I wanted to litigate. And when I got into the firm, I really didn't know what corporate did, but I just, once I got there, I sort of figured it out and I liked the people and it's a little more collaborative. It's not as, conflict-based as litigation tends to be. So, I think it can happen for people that they really do switch gears. So it's just an important piece to interviewing up here to know that it's such a big part of our hiring process.
Very helpful to know. So there's always been a rumor out there that if you want to work in the Boston legal market, you have to be born and raised in Boston, have strong ties. So is that true? Do you have to show very strong ties in order to break into the Boston legal market?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, the long, long answer here is that New York and D.C., if I look at those cities, there isn't a requirement, quote unquote, that you're from there. I think those markets readily accept people who are just passing through. I think New York assumes that everybody wants to work in New York because that's where the biggest and the best deals are done. That's where the biggest cases are. D.C. is the sort of the center of the universe for government. And I think people there are drawn to those practices. And when they're in an interview, that's all they have to say. With a city like Boston, and I would say this is true of Chicago and San Francisco and some of the other specialty cities, they want to make a judgment that you're going to stay. And if you're from here, you want to drop that in, obviously, in the first 10 seconds of the interview when they ask. Usually you walk into these 20-minute interviews and the first question is something very open-ended, like, so what brings you here today? Your first sentence should be, well, I'm from Boston. That's the area I want to – that's where I want to practice. That's where I want to come back to. Georgetown's been a great school. I love D.C., but, Boston's my home, and that's where I want to come back to. But the key next piece to that answer is, which is great because I want to work – with tech or biotech companies, I want to work on emerging companies, or I want to work on, I want to be a litigator that litigates, matters that, affect tech and biotech companies. So even if you're from here, you really need to get in that next piece that you're committed to the work that's done here. So it's two parts, commitment to the area, commitment to the work. If you're not from here, the way around that is pretty easy. I mean, I would try to drop in something about New England, that you've spent time here, your relatives here, your significant others here. If you can tie it to something, obviously it's helpful. But even if you have really never been here, but you just know you want to work in this kind of a market with emerging companies and sort of the hotbed for tech and biotech, there really are only two markets in the United States where you can find that, and it's Boston and the sort of Silicon Valley, San Francisco area. So I think a student who just doesn't have any obvious connections can really just hammer away that this is what I want to do and this is why I want to do it and this is, the city to do it in. And I think that's going to mean as much as the guy that just, has the local roots but never really emphasizes the desire to practice, So I think you can get around it. I mean, I know that the sort of, like you said, the word is out that Boston's just a funny city. I think the people from here tend to stay or come back. And our immediate, I'm a Bostonian, so my assumption and everybody's assumption, when somebody doesn't do that and they are from somewhere else and they don't want to go back to where they're from, we're skeptical because we just assume, why wouldn't this guy go back to Chicago? He's from Chicago. So you have to really proactively address that and say, you know, look, I'm from Chicago, I love it, and my family's there, but that work that I want to do or the work I want to do is found in Boston, and that's why I'm here. So I think it can, I think, you know, students can get around it if they have to.
Great. And if a student wanted, you know, say a student is from Boston or from New England and wanted to start their career in another city but wanted to eventually lateral to Boston, mm-hmm. is there a lateral market there?
Yeah, no. In fact, you know, some of the law schools that I speak at, and you know, I would have done the same thing with Georgetown. Is, you know, I stress that as Plan B. I mean, you're asking basically about someone who really wants to start in D.C. or New York. They should. I mean, they should start there because there'll always be a home for them in Boston. But you know, to emphasize the point, I think for students who want Boston but strike out, I would then target either New York or D.C. because I think if you can go and work at a, you know, big name firm in either city, they'll always be a home for you 2 and 3 years out. I mean, sometimes it's counterintuitive when I'll call into, you know, D.C. firms or New York firms to try to pull laterals out, and someone will say, well, I tried to get Boston out of law school. I couldn't get it. Why would they want me now? And it's just a different process. At that point, you know, a firm has a hole they're trying to fill, and that person is a marketable commodity. They've proven, hey, I did 2 years in New York at a big firm, and Boston firms react well to that. I mean, if you know, the pressure cooker of New York particularly, I think, is – a proving ground for associates, you know, that maybe for some reason they just couldn't pull it off out of law school. The market was slow, or they just had, you know, they didn't interview, you know, really well, or for some reason they just didn't pull it off. And, you know, all of a sudden now they add that big New York firm or a big D.C. firm on their resume, and the candidacy is viewed much differently. So I would, you know, encourage folks to, if for whatever reason they want to stay in those cities, to go for it. And if they're bidding strategically, that's a good plan B, you know, for, you know, if Boston just doesn't work out for them this time.
Yeah, great. So is there anything else that a student should consider when they're thinking about practicing in Boston?
You know, I think it's important to just, you know, remember the piece about that two-prong, you know, test is that you can both prove you're committed to the area and that you're committed to the kind of practice. I think if students, you know, when you walk into these meetings, like I said, or interviews, and they have this sort of open-ended question, I think these interviews are won and lost in the first, you know, couple of minutes. So, you know, that's an answer they really should practice and prepare and be able to rattle off, you know, in an elevator if they have to. And it's one that's good, I think, even for D.C. and other cities. I mean, if you have that good first sentence when you walk in, you can sort of change it a little bit depending on the kind of firm you're looking at. And the last thing I'd say is I haven't looked at the Georgetown list of firms that are coming, but, you know, one thing to really remember is if you divide Boston into thirds, you have sort of these big, giant firms that are here, Ropes, Goodwin, Wilmer, Morgan Lewis, Mintz. Then you have some medium-sized ones in sort of the second basket, which are more homegrown, Choate, Foley, Hoag, Sullivan & Worcester, Nutter. Those places will look to hire probably a split between corporate and litigation. So if you're on the litigation, and it's okay, I think, to go in and stress litigation in those interviews if that's what you want to do. Like I said, I would always encourage people to crack the door on corporate just because it gives you more bites at the apple. But for those group of firms, I think you're safe. The C group, however, there's a lot of firms that open Boston offices, satellite offices, and they're only here for the corporate or the IP work that's here. And sometimes if you look at a firm's website like Proskauer or Latham or Cooley, and globally, it looks like they have this, you know, huge litigation department, which they do. It's important to really drill down on the Boston office and see, and you'll look and find, geez, they have no litigators there at all. So if you walk into that C group and stress litigation, you're going to get tossed right off the bat. You'll have no chance. So, you know, I think it's important for students to just not look at the city and say, oh, these big firms are all the same. I mean, you know, globally they may be, but it's important to note, you know, what is the driving force in each office, especially when you see a 20-person office. I mean, it's pretty easy to quickly look down all the bios and say, all right, 19 of these people do corporate work. There's no
right.
hope for me as a litigator here. So that's sort of the last point I think that's worth noting.
That's a really helpful. Well, thank you so much. This has been extremely informative, and we so appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure. And for any of the Boston folks, I mean, if they can email me offline, call anytime. I'm happy to help throughout the process for anybody that's focused on getting back here.
Thank you so much, Rob.
Okay.